Hi, I'm Neil, and welcome to the Crosscast. Cross is here. At last, it's been 3 months since you last heard from us at Crosscast Towers. I think it was midsummer, and now it's pretty much the equinox, so it must be 3 months. Sun Racing is back, and the three-times world cyclocross champion, Wout Van Aert, has now won actually twice as many Tour de France stages this season than he did cross races last winter. And British national champion Tom Pidcock has won the under 23 Giro, clocking up again more stage wins at the Giro than he did in the entire cyclocross season last year. What's going on? Of course, things have been a bit quieter across the whole of the race world. A bit quieter for the women crossers for sure, although we have seen Yolanda Neff in action and Ava Lechner winning on the mountain bike, although there were some fairly lower level races. And Marianne Vos, well, how can we describe Marianne Vos? She's just been herself in every race she enters. In today's Cross Talk, though, we are going to get updates on the whole world of cross. UK domestic scene, international scene, and all of the team news that we think we can talk about at the moment. In today's last round, we're going to give a bit of a preview of some of the upcoming races that we're all chomping at the bit to get on with. As always, I'm joined in the studio by Matt Payne and Bruce Dalton. And Bruce, I have to confess, I saw some photos from your trip to France and it looked absolutely awesome, mate.
Yeah, it was wonderful. A lot of people will be thinking, oh, you went away, you managed to get away. Well, my partner's French, so we did some family visiting, went over there. The quarantine restrictions kicked in as we were over there, as we kind of figured they might do. So we made the most of our 3 weeks over there. And then as of Tuesday this week, I was allowed out after 2 weeks of full-on confinement. Didn't break the rules once. I stayed very much inside the house and in the garden. And now freedom has been out there to go and ride outside. But yeah, it was a great trip. But of course, I did a lot of virtual riding, which is something, Matt, you're probably the most expert virtual rider at the moment going, you know, not only riding, but also fantastic on a game.
No, thank you, mate. We've been running the Donny Chain Gang, really, to put something back into cycling and to give people a bit of a focus through lockdown and into the summer, with a view that it might be a short-term thing, but it looks pretty successful. It's been good, really interesting and entertaining to commentate on, I must admit, because there's always a lot happening. And because it's more of a group ride than a race as such, although it always seems to turn into that at the end, it's quite collaborative and people are really getting a lot from that. And it certainly makes it fun for me because we're looking back at all the people in the field rather than just the front runners, which makes a change. I'm waiting to see you, Bruce, on there like regularly because I guarantee it will raise your FTP. Just trying to hang on to the bunch because one thing you can guarantee with the pros on there, you do get dropped. Fortunately, I just talk about it. I'm saving my riding for being out in the Peak District and managing to get out on the bike a lot, which means I'm now 5 kilos lighter than I was during the start of lockdown. So I'm taking that and running, although I am permanently hungry, I must admit.
Well, that's an achievement, dropping 5 kilos, but being permanently hungry, that's no change to me to normal.
No, I must admit, I am being careful and just making sure that do refuel every time we go out and ride. So, yeah, there's none of this being silly, but and I must admit, you know, when you're heading for 90 kilos, 5 kilos isn't so much to lose.
Well, it's well worth it if you can work out how many joules that is going up a mountain.
You might be able to. That's definitely an engineer's maths, so definitely not mine. I'm glad you're the professor out of the lot of us now.
Yeah, well, it's been a good summer in some ways. I found it really different. You know, obviously, it's been completely different for everyone, but you know, not going round to like the National Mountain Bike Series and not going round to racing every week or at least once a week, it's been very, very different. And like everyone, I think we've been finding our own adventures and our own entertainment over the summer. We did a couple of overnighters, riding out to the beach and back, you know, leaving here at dusk and getting there for dawn and then coming back. And so it was a bit odd, that one, because I wasn't quite sure if that counts as being away over the summer. You know, bearing in mind, we didn't sleep until we were back home again, even though we were overnight. So it's been good fun, actually. I've
felt over the summer. I wouldn't want it like this every year, but in some ways it's kind of this forced break has been a really different experience for us. Of course, it's been interesting to see what all the cross riders have been up to over the summer, various things that have been going on. I was just looking back actually over the last few months since we last recorded back in June. I don't know if you saw the what they call it, the Battle of Ballenberg cyclocross, which was that like TT, which was, it was a good innovation, I thought, at the time. It was a way of people riding on their own individually. It had all the distancing element to it, perhaps not quite as much as we were experiencing over here at that moment. And of course, Thibaut Nais won and beat Matthew van der Poel.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive to see how Thibaut was going. And one thing I thought was really noticeable was that obviously Thibaut's full focus has been, you know, 24/7. Imagine living with Sven Nys. I mean, you're going to improve pretty well over the summertime, aren't you, on the school holidays? But he's really hot. And I think, I guess, I watched that and I thought, Van der Poel looks rusty. He was fluffing distance and messing up reroutes and unclipping on places he shouldn't have been. And yeah, Nys looked smooth.
Yeah, I don't think Mathieu took it that seriously. Thibaut Nys definitely took it seriously.
He sure did.
Yeah, and then other riders over in Belgium. This was a good spot by Mr. Finn Mansfield, who many of you know. So we saw the road race in Rotslare, where Laurens Sveek was racing. You know, the whole team were there, and it immediately said, "Oh, he's on his cross bike." You know, that's only teenagers, I'm sure, are able to pick that out at such a distance. But yeah, so true. There's him and Dieter van Turnhout, the same photograph. And Laurens Sveek, yeah, he was on his cross bike. Dieter was on his road bike. So clearly they've got the road bikes. So I thought that was really, really interesting. I mean, someone we haven't seen, though, is Matthew van der Poel very much over the summer. So I'm interested to know how he's going to come out. You know, he's not done much, whereas others have been, of course, very, very obvious, like Pidcock and Van Aert.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to sort of see that kind of this much talked about dominance of the Van der Poel and the Van Aert, you know, going up head to head fairly much, evenly squared up against each other, and much discussed as well around the whole team focus, because the full focus of Alpecin Fenix is very much based around Van der Poel, and Van Aert is definitely he's a cog in the Sunweb, so it's like, you know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, Jumbo Visma. But he's, you know, in the Tour, it looks like he's capable of doing anything. And if he can actually make it through without getting injured, like last year, then I think we should be able to, yeah, he should be coming in a great form as we get into the cross when he decides, if he decides to move across. And Joris Nieuwenhuis as well. Because he's one of our regular cross riders from Sunweb. He's also in the Tour. I don't think I've seen him mentioned ever on any of the Tour de France coverage. So I've kind of checked where he is, and he's kind of exactly where you'd expect someone early in their career. You know, sort of, I think about 20th in the young rider competition as we record. So yeah, they're out and about. But, you know, kudos and respect to Tom Pidcock, of course, for the baby Giro. Yeah, I mean, one of the things which is nice with Tom, actually, he doesn't hide very much. And I don't know if you saw the interview with him at the end of the the Giro, baby Giro, when he was being interviewed at the end. And someone said, "Oh, where does it go from here? Do you think that you're going to be moving into?" Moving on to the Tour de France, and it was just quite straightforward. He said, "Oh, I reckon 2 years, 2 years until we get to the Tour." So yeah, really interesting aspirations there. And I think if he's, yeah, he seems to be able to do well at anything.
He's just a very, very impressive rider, isn't he? And you know, it's things like, to me, showing up at the mountain bike race, the stage race that he did as a marathon rider, and again he nearly won that, but then was delayed and just lost out on the win overall, I think, because of a slight tape incident out on the course. But it's like, you know, it's really impressive to be able to do that, and of course we've seen riders just going for whatever racing they can get their hands on, which I think is, you know, the ones who really love racing just want to get back out and ride, don't they? And you've seen that wherever there has been racing, because there hasn't been a lot of it in the UK.
No, not very much. Yeah, I think, Bruce, have you done any time trials this year? I think I saw a photo of you and
yeah, that's right,
some tri bars.
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's, you know, driven to time trials. Who knows? I mean, you set yourself all these challenges of things to do. It's like the dirty candles from last time. I mean, after we've finished recording this, I'm rewarding myself for a post quarantine ride by doing an epic ride between all my grandparents. So I'll be doing 500, nearly 600k this weekend. Nice. Starting from as soon as we finish this, so it's you know, like, everyone's going to be turning to different forms of racing, really.
Yeah. Well, you kept it upright, which is good.
Yeah, that's the
so far.
Thing.
Yeah, the other news out there with riders is the world champion in her category, Marianne Norber-Riberol. I don't know if you saw, she had a crash on the road, which it looked really horrible. It was like, basically, I mean, it wasn't, you know, there was no risk of, or no suspicion of kind of being long-term damage, but it seemed like every limb, every bit of skin was affected. And yeah, it was just horrible, you know, with both hands, both feet, I think knees, you know, the whole works, all being treated. But I was pleased. I think she was back racing last week. So I was relieved to see her back, particularly with being a current world champion.
Yeah, and of course we've got the Giro Rosa starting this weekend as well in Italy, biggest race in women's cycling, which will be really interesting. Got a lot of cross riders and favourites in there.
Yeah. So who have we got? Abby May Parkinson, I think, is on the start list for that. So yeah, good luck, Abby May. So yeah, I'd be interested to see how she goes. Do you know, Bruce, if that's her first time at Giro Rosa?
I'm not sure. I think it might be. Yeah, I don't recall from the past where she's ridden, particularly because it's, you know, unusual to get a lotto call-up at that race straight away.
Yeah.
So it's a hard one to get one for.
Yeah. Just today, as we're recording on the 11th, Lucinda Brand has withdrawn, just not being on form. So she's not fit. You know, you never know the backstories behind these and what's led up to the situation. But a surprise, actually. I would have expected her to ride, certainly if she could. But at this stage, Lucinda Brand is not starting the Giro Rosa,
which is, frankly, for a prominent sprinter, is quite unusual, particularly because it's such a big race in the women's calendar.
That's right, yeah. And whether she would... I mean, you makes you wonder. No, kind of. I'd have thought even if she was at 90%, she'd have still wanted to ride. So yeah, interesting one there. But she knows what she's doing. I'm sure she and she'll be back and racing on the cross bike
pretty soon. Yeah. Hopefully.
The other one, did you see it? Was the where was it? It was that Dornbirn Zanzenberg race. That really muddy mountain bike race. It's going to be in that catalogue of comedy sliding down the hill for, well, I don't know how many were in the race. Let's say there were 100. I'll talk about the women's race here. If there were 100 in the race, 99% of them were unable to ride it. And who was the one person who could? Yolanda Neff. Absolutely stunning skills. Phenomenal skills. I'm sure many of you will have seen this, but if you haven't, just have a look at that. It's, you kind of get Yolanda Neff able to ride sections that literally everyone else, it was one of those ones where it was so slippery that some riders were sitting down either deliberately or, and they were riding pretty, yeah, she was riding it pretty well. It wasn't quite so prominent in her reporting, was actually she DNF'd in that race. She pulled out before the finish. And Annie Last, respect to Annie, finished on the podium, finished third. So, again, Annie, clearly on some level of form at the moment.
Yeah, she's managed to keep the racing up, which is really good. And it, obviously, it looks like a very, very strong Track Factory racing for this this winter or summer or autumn or whatever we want to call it this year, this season.
Yeah, it kind of feels like all the seasons at once, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like how you end up, you're sitting down and we're talking about Cross now, but we've also got Tirreno Adriatico, the famous season opener for the road side of things, and the Tour's on. So it is all a bit mad.
Talking about what the rider's been doing over the summer. But looking ahead, we've got some really interesting teams coming out. And yeah, okay, I hold my hands up even before I've ever mentioned them. As much as I'm trying not to be a fanboy from day one, Trek Factory Racing women's team, I was ecstatic when I saw that announcement. I mean, four riders who would probably be way up there in my, you know, favourite riders. Madigan Munro, I've had the pleasure of seeing her race. Amazing US rider. Yolanda Neff, who is just an amazing rider anyway. Evie Richards and Hattie Harnden. What an amazing team.
Yeah, and it's really interesting watching what they're doing through the summer. Evie's really been just enjoying life, which is great to see. I mean, I think she's a rider who does race on being happy. And the smiles at the moment through the summer have been immense. So she's looking really positive. Yolanda Neff is Yolanda Neff, let's face it. She's always going to be up there and racing. Madigan Munro, you say, really good, great character. But Hattie Harnden, for me, is the rider who this season, I think, is the one to really come forward. I mean, her focus is immense. We know that. Her racing the World Enduro Series and how she's ridden that is beyond words. I mean, she's just gone in and blasted it apart. And she's a rider who I think is just going to progress and progress and progress. And I think it's going to be challenging for that top spot very, very soon within GB and within the team.
You've got to think as well with someone like Hattie, whereas, you know, the rest of the riders on that team, Hattie's just, she's gone from being in school to being a full-time athlete. And then the jumps that come with that are just massive, particularly how strong she was last year.
I think the other interesting thing with this team is just looking at the different age categories. Now, it's a real team for the future. You've got the really experienced rider who's been there, done that, and won pretty much everything in Yolanda Neff. And then kind of coming through with the different categories behind. You know, I mean, I think I may be wrong here, but I think that it would be possible for them to get four different world championships with that next year. You know, if you have an under 23 and an elite.
Yeah. I mean, there's potential not just have four world championships, but to have multiple discipline world champions amongst your world champions. It is like a super group from, you know, the 1970s, 80s. It's pull all the best old bits in and it's there. I mean, haven't helped anybody if they get up against that lot when they're out racing. I think it's going to make life harder, I think, if we have.
I thought you were going to say if they're out celebrating after a race. Well, I was going to say the other interesting one, I'm going to choose my words here. Eagle-eyed people may have noticed a signing for EKO Crefan. But I've seen no official announcement from the team themselves. But shall I say, just keep an eye on that. There's some really interesting British interest in that team for the future. And I'm sure some people may have noticed this already. But that's a really exciting news.
I think without giving it away, I think it is amazing how we are producing such volume of quality riders who are racing strongly. And the rider we're talking about is somebody who's come through the youth ranks, through the under 14s, the under 16s, and now has moved up, and really has produced consistently without coming from a particularly cycling background. Has come in and really has done the best. And I think it's going to be very interesting over the next couple of years to see how many more riders we can keep churning out. You know, we talk about the old Trek Medal Factory. Well, GB doesn't do that anymore because I think it's Cross that is the, you know, we are pushing numbers in there, and the credibility of British riders is immense.
And look at the transfer from the Cross riders into other disciplines. I mean, just to be clear with the listeners, you know, I think the reason we're not giving names here is we're not sure that we should at this stage. We don't want to embarrass anyone by kind of giving a journalistic scoop, because that's not what we're about. But I'm sure things will come out in due course. But we're really excited about that. And as soon as we can, we'll be talking about it again, I'm sure.
That can't be the only scoop, can it? There's Neil, you and I must know at least another scoop, maybe Bruce does.
Yeah, Bruce, what's any other riders who are missing from teams who you might know what's happening with them?
I might have an inkling in a couple of weeks' time. It might be some interesting things developing for UK and for international racing. It's been
involving yourself, Bruce, is the
involving myself and a few other prominent riders who frankly are better than me.
Well, listeners, what you can't see is Bruce squirming in his seat.
Yeah,
honestly, it's short of waterboarding him. There's not a lot more pressure we can put on him. He's literally wiping his brow with sweat, trying not to give away all the details that he knows without actually. He's bursting. It's kind of bubbling in his ears, and kind of, if he put his fingers in his ears, he'd be plugging them to try and stop the news from coming out. But come on, so we're not going to get anything out of you, Bruce. You're not going to spill the beans today.
All I can say is you need to keep an eye on social media on October the 1st for the launch of something.
October the 1st, as soon as we can. We'll talk to Bruce when we record on October the 2nd.
For the full evening.
Obviously there's something going to be happening on that day. Is there going to be anything live, an event?
Yeah, so
we'll stream it?
We're going to be doing some streaming. Yeah, we'll have a reveal of some of the riders, what the aims of the team, because it's a bit different to what a few people have done in the past.
Maybe we could stream it through the Crosscast.
We would love to be able to do that. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
And something that everyone be able to watch and time into.
Yeah, I mean, it's significant. We know perhaps more than we let on here, but okay, so let's move on to some other domestic news now. So the National Trophy Series, it's going to be fabulous, isn't it? It's going to be our own very own historical rerun. It takes me back to the 15th century, doesn't it, you know, with our very own Wars of the Roses, with their skirmishes in Kent, and then the battle in York, and the Battle of Lancaster, and who's going to come out being the Dukes? Who knows what's going to happen? They're looking really blank.
I mean, I'm getting the historical references. I'm just...
Well, is anybody going to get buried with a bike? Is that going to be the question? Are we going to maybe be digging up bones underneath? You know, are we going to see somebody being discovered underneath a car park in a few hundred years' time?
My trophy bike.
For a bike.
Right. That's a lot more relevant than you might think.
Younger listeners are going to be going, what are they on about? If you have a bike, you need to get to the library and get a book.
We do need to caveat everything we're going to say here. Today is the 11th of September. This is when we're recording, and this is as things stand now. And we know things can change overnight. So we've got, coming up in the National Trophy Series, three races as of today. One at Westmoreland, so that's kind of the House of Lancaster. One in York, which is the House of York, and one at Cycling Park, which is kind of like the Kent team. That's the Wars of the Roses reference there, people. So we've got the three races, all of those cracking venues, all, you know, challenging. They're all tough races, all three of those. We've got a trophy series there, just about three races. What's the news, Matt? Anything you can update us with on what the format's going to be, how it's all going to work?
Well, let's sort of give a bit of an overview on this, because essentially, I think at the middle of the summer, we were looking at a point where we have to change what we do, or we have no series and we have no cross. And there's been definitely a look forward. A lot of the leagues have been putting in hundreds of thousands of hours just to be able to interpret government guidelines, then take the BC guidelines and move those forward. And it's resulted in, as we know, most of the leagues being on a one bike, and there being different race formats and times, just to physically get the events safe and to make them actually compatible with venues, etc. Now, with the trophy, it's probably going to be the biggest scale event and the first national series that's going to come back since we had the big break from racing and riding in lockdown. What it does mean, three events out of the five are left, two falling by the wayside, and really looking forward to, hopefully, for them coming back next year. But Westmorland kicking off, followed by Cyclo Park, and then York should be the next one of the three. Now, obviously, the two events that are following on from Westmorland are going to be looking very closely at what happens, and riders should bear in mind, and me as a commentator and anybody going there, that these are going to be very much trial and error. That nobody's done this before. Nobody's tried to put on a cross in this environment with the same restrictions, etc., over the top. So you're still going to get trophy points. There's still going to be a trophy series overall. That means that if I beat Bruce and Bruce beats Neil, next time we go to the next event, that'll be the grid, and I'll be on the front of the row, and, you know, poor old Neil will be looking with the telescope at the back at me disappearing off in the distance now that I weigh less. However, if then we all change position at round two, it'll be the accumulation of one and two when we get to three. So it's basically as it was, same in terms of most of the setup, in terms of racing and distances, although it is going to be subject to change on the day because we don't know how long it's going to take to move things about on site and how it's exactly going to run because it's totally new territory. The good news is we've got racing. The good news is we've got all the categories in there racing. It is going to be different. Going to be lots of people needing to social distance, wear masks, wash your hands, all the usual messages. I'm going to record them on a loop because my job is definitely going to change. It's going to very much be about announcing and not about commentating as much. That is for sure. However, should be a great fun weekend out for people when we get to those events, if all three run on the way through. Biggest difference, no national ranking points this year. They were paused at the end of 2019 after the end of the cross season. The 1920 season ended. And at that point, all the points are held. And that is going to continue right the way through to the national championships next year, potentially beyond that. Also, you're going to find out that there's going to be no UCI points at the events either. And that is going to have changed as well. So that is a bit of a difference that you're going to see. And that is as of today. And yeah. As of 2:44 in the afternoon. If it goes beyond that, there's gonna, you know, you're gonna have to look out for the announcements, and that is one of the things where we've been struggling, I think, is getting the information out there.
And to explain some of that, I mean, as I understand it, so things like the UCI points, is that if we were offering UCI points, then it would have to meet more requirements which may be out of the control of the organisers, and even not legal, you know. And so then you've got the real tension of whether you can actually put the event on at all.
In UCI points, just to give it a bit more depth, it is about being able to have riders turn up here from any country. It's about being able to meet all the UCI rules and regs in pits and distances and race lap times and guarantee that time scales, and then get the UCI officials in and out. And as we know, you know, you could do a Bruce and go over to France and get stuck with having to do a quarantine when you come back, and that affects everything. It's ongoing, you know, things change. But as of today, organised sport going forward, not a problem if it's through the framework. One of the big differences with the trophy is, in the framework, there are no pits, and in the national trophy, there will be pits. But probably better to hear it from the man himself, I think.
We're going to dive into the pits, and potentially without anyone in the pits. Maybe you'll find out what that's referring to in a moment. We're joined by Dave Haygarth. He's been on the show, I've lost count, many times. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm good, thank you. I'm excited about the what remains of the cross season starting to take shape now.
We normally get you at this time of year because of the Three Peaks preparation. How are your Three Peaks preparations going this year? Have they been different to previous years? The zero peak.
Well, I'm really someone who either rides the peaks every year or has done in the past, and everyone's saying what a strange time of year it is, because people are able to sort of focus on how they want to train rather than letting one specifically for it. And it's a very strange feeling. It's not the first time we've been here. The three peaks have been taken off the calendar a couple of times in my memory with the foot and mouth disease.
Tell us about what to expect. How's it all looking?
It's looking complicated and hard work, but very exciting. I have really had to wrestle with a lot of kind of internal dialogue and stuff to keep it moving. And there's been a few kind of big hiccups that have worried us along the way, really. I think when we all saw the COVID infection rates coming down and we saw them in the earlier part of summer, we all felt very optimistic. It was all quite an exciting time. But it, as we know, things are coming back. It's not as straightforward as just opening things up again. And as one of the biggest problems I've had to overcome, really, was British Cycling's kind of staff on furlough, because it's their event. The National Trophy Series is something that local organisers will organise around, but it's done very closely with British Cycling. They handle the entries. It's done under their rules. It's done under their guidelines. And so it got frustratingly slow at times. Let's just put it that way. You could argue that it was just hard to make any progress for a good chunk of the summer, really, because of the staff coverage in British Cycling, which is understandable. They're an organisation who are meant to represent cyclists, but they also have to, like any organisation, have to make sensible business decisions to try and defend their staff and their jobs. So that's kind of been the biggest problem.
What have we got in store? How's the venue going to be? Will it be very different?
It will be different, yeah. It will be a very tough course, which will always happen at a cross race, but we've had to make a lot of adjustments, really, because of the way that the pits are going to work out. I mean, firstly, you hinted at it before, there's a... The pits have not passed British Cycling's own risk assessment for the COVID guidance they've been given from government. And so we've had to, the biggest thing is we've had to comply with their request that the pits are going to exist on the course, but there'll be a self-service pit. There'll be no washers on site. So that's immediately going to affect the racing. And anyone who was there last year, particularly on the Sunday, knows that pits were absolutely essential last year. And anyone who's travelled more than half an hour to a race doesn't want to go home after 10, 15 minutes with a broken rear mech. So I've done a lot of work on the course to try and make as maximum use of the harder surfaces and tracks whilst trying to keep the main character of a lot of the features and the run-ups and things. And I'm confident that we've got a brilliant cross course still, but it will give people the opportunity to try and keep their bike a bit cleaner and maybe just do that strategic change if it is very muddy halfway through their races.
Because of that, it is going to change strategy for riders. As you say, you lose a mighty lot of time by not having a spare bike and having to run to the finish compared to the amount of time it would take you to clean your bike to keep it running well. So I think that's going to be, it's going to be a fascinating thing to see how people handle that.
You can have up to, I think we're expecting people to have a bike that they're racing on and up to two bikes in the pits.
Oh, right.
They haven't put a number on it, but I think that's reasonable, really, given the amount of space we've got in the pits. And people can take wheels in if they'd like, and any spares or anything they want. It's game over, I think, if you start to get into any other mechanical fixing of anything through the race. So people are going to have to make some careful decisions about what they're going to take. It's ultimately still is cyclocross, Neil. I've been through this, so many times with so many people, and it is, but it's just not cross as we know it. And I think it's going to, people are going to have to think very carefully about a race strategy. And that's just the way we've got to adapt to the world as it is at the present time, I'm afraid.
And I think we try to say that cross is very accessible and you can turn up on any bike. And there are many people that are starting cross that do this all the time. They don't have the luxury of having a pit crew and more than one bike. So it will be a bit of a return to that's when people started riding, compared to, you know, having a spare bike and then having two of the same and then having two really nice bikes.
Yeah, of course. And we need to balance that. We just need to balance that against the fact that people are perhaps driving for 3.5-4 hours, and if it's going to be game over with a broken mech after, you know, 10-15 minutes, then that's not very nice either. And so it's a tricky one, but I mean, it's something we've got to get used to. It's kind of that or nothing at the moment. As you know, many of the leagues are just saying no pits, just one bite. So it's a kind of luxury, really, to have this self-service pit.
And you're saying people travelling, I mean, how is it looking on the entries at the moment?
Well, it's right now as we speak, it's pretty much to the hour 1 week since we opened the entries, and we're up to 570 across the 12 different categories. We've got, so that's something like 47, 48 per race as an average field. I don't know. I don't really have anything to compare this to compared to last year, because I didn't get sight of the entries last year as they were coming.
Oh, I see.
But I mean, the biggest ones, go on, have a guess which ones have got the biggest entries in.
Under 14 boys?
Close, under 16. yeah, the youth boys are doing very well. We've still not got loads of senior and under 23 women, it still is growing, but it's difficult to know until the entries have completely come in. There's only 23 people so far entered the under 23s women, and 15 entrants in the junior women. But these numbers are still growing year on year, and I'm going to do a bit of a targeted push to really encourage women to enter, because of course with the equal prize lists in both races, it's almost guaranteed that a lot of people are going to go home with a prize, with some prize money in the women's race at the moment.
That's true, but also that's a respectable race. You're still going to get a race.
Oh definitely. And these will be very accomplished riders as well. It's a national level race, and you'll definitely get some good racing,
particularly if you're under 23 senior woman. there's some really good points. Well, no, I mustn't say that. Don't know about points yet. We'll talk to Matt about that with what's happening on that side. But yeah, there's certainly opportunities there. And then just as we move forwards, of course, there are still the risks there. I mean, everyone is facing risk of cancellation. Well, I saw today, actually, the Southampton Boat Show was due to start today and it got cancelled, I think, 6:30 last night. So there are clearly still going to be a level of uncertainty right up until the day, I guess. But I mean, are there any key milestones that you're looking at along the way?
I don't really share that uncertainty. I think maybe my glass is always half full, Neil. I think we've kind of been through those pinch points now, and the Prime Minister's announcement this week about the down to kind of six people in contact is we know as an organised sports event we can handle it. I've got someone working specifically on the COVID stuff for the project, Karen Heppenstall, who I'm sure you'll know, and she's her day job is so well suited to a task like this. So I'm confident that we can answer every question about the movement of people around the course. We've got plans for getting people on and off the course. We've got plans for the way that any family and hangers-on and spectators might move around at any time and things. And as soon as you've got a plan, as soon as you've got things written down in a very long risk assessment style spreadsheet, you can adapt them and you can change them. You've got something to move, and that gives you confidence. As long as if you're starting from absolutely nothing, then everything seems like a terrible task. But if you're adapting, you know, some already defined arrangements, it's a lot easier.
Dave, you know, every event you're involved with, they're good events, well worth making the trip for. I've really enjoyed the race up there last year, and looking forward to coming up again this year.
You'll enjoy it, Neil. All your money back. Just you, Neil. No, not all the listeners. Not Bruce, he won't enjoy it.
Dave, thanks ever so much for joining us on the Crosscast. I mean, I'm so delighted to see that there's going to be the event up in Millthorpe this year. Always a good event. Last year, it was certainly one of my favourites. And the details in it, clearly designed by a racer who knows how to make a really challenging and fun course to ride. I'm looking forward to seeing you next month, Dave.
Looking forward to it too. We're going to have some fun.
Great. I'll see you then. All right. Cheers.
All right. Bye.
That was really good to hear Dave's enthusiasm and the amount of hard work that's already gone into the trophy. You know, we all hope that it'll happen and we plan for that. But, you know, there's a lot of work that's gone into making that. And I'm certainly looking forward to racing my bike for the first time this season.
I'm really excited about it, actually. When the entries came out and I put mine in immediately, I had a real excitement. Yeah, this is kind of, I'm desperate to get there and to see what's going to happen. Well, one of the things that I was planning at the end of last season, actually, and we're going to do it this year, even though there's only three races. Now, we're all very familiar with the Dave AV series. And so I thought this year we'd have our very own equivalent, the CVV series, which stands for the Crosscast Virtual Victors. So the CVV.
You can tell listeners that Neil got bored during lockdown, can't you? He's been dreaming these up for months,
so,
really.
So, you know, a quick quiz, not that difficult, guys. Yeah, what's the fundamental difference between, say, the Super Prestige series and the DVV?
Points one's got... Points or time,
yeah. So this is what we're going to do. So as an extra little bonus, as a Crosscast bonus, we'll have the CVV. So we'll look at the times and see whether, if we did it under like DVV rules, whether there'd be any difference if someone finishes way ahead in one race, way behind in another, just for fun. Might see if we can get a prize at the end, but don't hold your breath.
I'm liking that because that could be really, really interesting. Because if it's taken on time, all this sitting up and just rolling into the line is going to cost people positions in the CBV.
That's right, yeah. And of course, it's going to be, you know, that is going to be the highlight of the season for whoever wins that. And I to be honest,
might be the only thing people can win.
Yeah. Just to make Bruce pedal to the end of the race and not sit up and look round and go, yeah, I've done it. I can be a pro now and just roll in.
That's it.
To be honest, I just hope that it is slightly different, but not that much different to the points. Yeah. It would be really interesting to see. Yeah.
That's going to be really interesting. Updates on that, Neil. Where are we going to be able to access those?
Yeah, so we'll put that up on the Facebook page. And we've also had a few bits of information as things have come through from some of the trophy organisers as well. And we'll pop those up on the Facebook page if we get like press releases or anything like that. I mean, we are not an official communications channel. But if we get anything from any of the organisers, then certainly we'd be more than happy to put it up. But yeah, we can't answer the questions. We're not the organisers. So, but as a communications channel, that would seem to be pretty good. So the other race of the year, you know, looking way ahead into up to Crawley, is that business as usual?
At the moment, the answer to that, when I've had conversations with Dougie, the organiser down there, is basically probably yes. But as like with all organisers, he's balancing the effort, the time to put in. Remember, all these organisers, they do this for fun. I don't really want to know what they do for fun outside of organising races, because it's pretty masochistic stuff to go out and spend all your time knitting together what is a major event. But Dougie was really positive, and he's got a fantastic venue down at Arding Lake in Crawley. It is a huge venue. And one of the biggest things we're finding with socially distanced safe events is that you need masses of space. Well, it's huge. You know, it's absolutely immense. You put a small town in that showground, and it is going to be easier for him, I think, than some of the other organisers who maybe have a more compact venue.
Yeah.
Whether it goes ahead, remember, there's a lot of stakeholders. We are still talking UCI, National Governing Body in British Cycling. We've got Dougie and all of the Crawley Wheelers, but all of the Southern Cross community as well that pulled together to make that happen. Plus, of course, all the athletes, etc. So I think
I've got my fingers crossed. I've got the hotel booked. I'm planning on it. I've got to be positive and hope it goes ahead. COVID's not going to go away. It's not going to disappear overnight. It's not like the millennium bug. You tick past the year 2000 and magically it either works or it doesn't. It's going to be around a while. And I think that's, for me, the organisers really deserve it. They're out there, putting it out there, trying to make it work and trying to give us a future sport. And yeah. And it is fairly binary. We change and we have a sport, or we don't change and, well, I'll go commentate on Tiddlywinks.
Yeah, and the sport is happening. You know, is things are planned, things are going ahead. You know, there's been changes to, I think, all of the series, as I can understand. The only information which I haven't seen is the confirmation of which rounds are going to have junior races. But the World Cup looks like it's not starting until November now. But there's other rounds that have been put in and shuffled around slightly. So there's a lot happening. And you know, the other series, Etias Cross, is starting. Well, that's one of the first ones to start, and then as we'd be used to by now, you know, the other series are all look like they're all going ahead in some form. So really, you know, looking forward to getting some coverage, and it looks like we're going to be able to get some live coverage of some of those. But locally, again, where are we locally? A lot of the leagues have stopped altogether. Some of them are offering like pop-up events, so they're, even though they're organised by the same people, there's no formal league. Has anyone actually started yet? I know of a few.
I have been guilty. I'll do an admission first. I've been guilty of using the phrase pop-up event, but there isn't such a thing as a pop-up event. You don't just chuck a marquee up and magically it pops up. I think independent events, I think, would probably be a good phrase, and probably one that Neil would approve of. There's independent events within areas, because after seeing the work that the guys have gone through to make events happen, they're not pop-up. They're not just like you open the book and magically up it pops like a kid's pop-up book. These things are brutal. And there's a lot of work going in them.
Can you remember ever making a pop-up book? They were very, very complex, weren't they?
Come on, Bruce. Did you ever make a pop-up book?
Have you ever seen a book?
Yeah, I have. the closest thing I've got to that recently is making a photo album for the first time, which is what people used to do in the olden days before they showed their phones to people. That was a bit of a throwback for people. But no, I mean, I haven't made a pop-up event, but I think your point about, you know, pop-up events is absolutely true. Like, even for when organisers say, oh, we'll just quickly throw together this loop on a GPX and then we'll ride it beforehand and then we'll go and do these things. Anything that's a bike event has taken lots and lots of work and effort and gone into organising it. But what I was just going to say was that, you know, we've had such a dearth of events for obvious reasons this year. It's been unusual for whatever reason, but it's also given everyone loads of time to be very fit. So regardless of what events there are, no one should say that they haven't had the opportunity to go out there, be fit and be ready for anything. If a cyclocross race turned into a 2.5-hour event, you should get out there and race the thing and support the organisers that have gone to the effort to making it happen.
There are a number running. I think Eastern is running, and we're going to see some of the London ones running. We're going to see Yorkshire doing a number of events, which are there. Very few awarding league points. North West are going to run, and hence the support for Dave's event. We know that the East Kent are doing quite a lot of their events are coming back again. But of course, Notts and Derby as well, which is going to be where Neil is going to prove just how fast he is when he takes on lots of former world champs in the Vet 50s, because it's probably the most competitive. I think it's going to be really interesting. I mean, I think Bruce's point is really, really, really true, that there's lots and lots of people wanting to enter events. I mean, we saw it with Dave talking about his entries in the interview. Masses of people straight in there wanting to race. There's a massive enthusiasm to do so. And lots of the local leagues are putting conditions. Some of them are existing, like Notts and Derby, basically prioritising riders who are in Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire. Oddly enough, it's in the title. Right, leagues like Eastern, who are prioritising people who rode the year before in Eastern League, and so on. But numbers seem to be high across the board, across all of the events. And that is making for really interesting numbers. It does help the organisers. If you enter early, they know how many loose to get in. They know how many medics they need. They know how much tape they need. They know how much space they're going to need for car parking. And all that is critical. But most of the race fields are limited in terms of sizes so that they can be processed fast enough and to keep people separated, particularly in vulnerable age groups. And just seen today, the Cyclocross Northeast, they're going to be running. They're going to have less races and I think smaller race fields again, just like most of the leagues are, just to keep it going, which is going to be really interesting because, as you say, you might not get in all the races that you plan for, unless you're Bruce, of course, who's a superstar stroke adept blagger of anything.
I think the what I was going to say was that really, you know, the other thing with this is that if organisers, you know, this is the first race of the season when I feel we'll set the tone for the rest of the year. And if we support the organisers that have gone to the effort, then I think people will feel a bit more confident to potentially look into actually all putting in the hard effort that it will take to make these events run. And everyone sort of has a duty to not only comply with things, but also to just help the organisers by making sure that it doesn't turn into, you know, massive financial risk and that we can support them in any way we can do, because frankly, a lot of people, you know, are on the verge of losing money, not making money from these events. You don't get rich by putting on events, unfortunately. I wish people did, but not the case. And by supporting people, at least it might allow us to continue having some form of sport. It is not cyclocross as we know it, as Dave Hagar said, but it is still cyclocross.
Absolutely. And at that, let's look forward to some cyclocross and we'll have a brief enter into the Laster Rond. So in the Laster Rond, we always look forward to the upcoming races, and there are some. We didn't know that this was going to happen 6 months ago, but certainly we have races coming up. I think the first one, which is an Etias Cross, one of the international races, is at Lucheren, or Rappen Cross, as known as. And it's a race, a fairly low-key race, but probably, to be honest, we wouldn't normally cover it particularly. But because it's the first of the races on the continent, it definitely deserves a mention. And you're going to be able to see it. I think they're covering it on GCN this year. It's actually moved from its original date, so it's gone back a couple of weeks. And this is, you know, there's a few things that are this perhaps well known for. I mean, as a course, it's a, you know, it's a classic early season Belgian cross course. It all depends on the weather, and it's got, it's really quite loose. It's got some really nice woods. It's got this sand section where they always seem to put 180s in it, and if a big rut comes through it, it's as if it's a berm. It's more like BMXing than cross. But perhaps what it's most well known for are the ditches. And if you remember a couple of years ago when Matthew van der Poel was stretchered off early season and we thought that he was going to be out, that happened at this race, and that was from one of these ditches. I mean, they're proper ditches. Bruce, I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I'm just trying to remember whether I've raced it or not. It's very similar to one which is close to it over the lake at St. Nicholas, but I haven't actually raced. I'm very familiar with what that type of course is like, because it's something that we don't really get in the UK, apart from Lincolnshire and Eastern races, which is this very, very fast sort of piney loam that happens when you've got years and years of deciduous trees just, you know, shedding their leaves. And it's a very, very fast course, and it will be interesting to see if people like Tounets can carry their road form onto the dirt.
God, we know that he won't, because he's not going to be riding for months on the cross bike. And one of the interesting things there is I looked at the regulations and things that they have put in and the changes they've made to be, well, COVID secure, COVID compliant. And there are no spectators going to be in. Actually, that race doesn't normally get a huge crowd anyway, but yeah, it's going to have no spectators. And the pits, they are going to have pits, but it says in their rules that it's going to be considerably longer than in previous years.
I think it's going to be really interesting, isn't it? I mean, for years we have moaned that we don't get spectators like the Belgian crosses. But you know what? It's a real headache now, because can you imagine? I mean, if anyone's been to a Belgian cross race, it's up close, it's personal. I've lost count of the number of times I've been watching a race, peering underneath somebody's sweaty armpit whilst breathing in cigarette smoke and getting beer thrown on my head. Well, you know, can you imagine that sort of, you know, crowd, the cross crowd in the middle of COVID? That's just personally, I'm quite glad there's no spectators. Can you imagine the bubble of infection? Normally, I mean, they're, you know, breathing the same air, never mind anything else.
And then the pits, there, you know, people were going to have like 1.5 meter distancing. And everyone in the pits need to be wearing gloves and face masks. So it's going to be really interesting. I think that, you know, for that race, I think the pits is going to be really interesting how they're handling it and how well they get on with it. I hope there's, well, we'll see. It might be an alternative as we go later in the season in the UK.
Definitely. But I think one of the things to remember, numbers of riders, the volume of riders generally isn't as great as we get in the UK. A lot of our leagues are bigger than, in terms of volume of riders, than the Belgian races. The Belgian races we hold up as this pinnacle, but they are the top of the pyramid and as such have quite small fields, whereas in the UK we have big fields. I mean, nothing like the stateside. I mean, any of our stateside listeners will be going, you've got big fields, we need 5 days for our national championships. You know, like everything in the States, it's been bigger. But I think it's going to be interesting, as Neil says, to see whether it changes over, whether we can take any of the ideas. And I think for them it's going to evolve. I don't expect to see pretty much the same setup 2 weeks in a row on the continent, because as things evolve, as people learn what works and what doesn't, it's going to change, it's going to evolve. And exciting times. I mean, you know, we've wanted a shake-up for a while. We've certainly got it now.
Yeah, and that EKZ series in Switzerland. Like that, Bruce, I know you're very familiar with this. Is their first round in Baden?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, up on the hillside, big sort of flowing course, mainly grassy with a couple of step features in there. But yeah, the racing to continue quite close to normal, really, again with social distancing involved. But generally speaking, it looks like they've had reasonable from entries from what I've seen on Twitter from Christian Rocha, the organizer there, and actually it looks like there might even be a live stream of that. So, you know, good to see some other big international races. There's definitely, I believe that's the first race out for Thibaut Nice this year. So that'd be interesting to see how that develops, as it's often been a season opener for people wanting to get the early season racing in.
And then in the UK, it's the I like the name of this one, the No Nonsense CX. Two-day events. What a level of commitment. I mean, respect to the organisers of these
events. If anyone knows the organiser, Ian Spencer is a bit of a force of nature, really is. And he's got a closed venue up at Hunsworth. He's putting it on. And what they've done is to make it easier. They've actually got the same number of races maybe you'd have in your average league, but they've split it over 2 days. So there's plenty of time in between each race to actually space people in, take them out. And they've got restrictions. I mean, you can't turn up more than an hour before your race, and you have to have left the car park 30 minutes after your race finishes. So they're very carefully managing people on and off site. But in true Yorkshire fashion, it is, hey, oh, you're doing this, you're doing that, lad, and that's what you're getting. And do you know what? They've got lots of entries, and it's going to be really interesting to see, because that, I think, is the first race on and one of the few races before the National Trophy, along with the Cyclocross North East one up at Foxbury Chasers. I mean, that's the 27th of September. So that's getting close to when we're going to be looking at Westmorland. So limited racing. Bruce, you're... You know, what are you going to get? How many races are you going to get in before a national trophy this year?
Zero. And maybe there might be a Derby Mercury time trial I can potentially go and do. But it's doing stuff like this big ride that I've got planned for the rest of the weekend. You know, how do you get? You just have to make yourself, you know, go out and do different things, because you need to get in a different volume of training, and you want to try and do that. And if you can't race, then we've seen teams on the road side of things focus far more on training and a lot less on racing. And I do wonder whether people will come in faster to potentially not racing every weekend. You can actually really perfect your training, which is going to give you the big gains.
So, Bruce, you're 500K then this weekend. So most of that in Derbyshire, or are you going further afield?
No, I'm going a bit further afield. So tonight I'm going to ride over to Grantham, where my gran lives. It's basically because I've just come out of quarantine, so I'm at the lowest COVID risk possible, and I haven't seen my grandparents for a while. And so I'm going to ride over to Grantham, and then on Saturday I'm going to ride from Grantham to north of North Yorkshire, north of Harrogate. So that's a pretty long 120 miles. And then on all the way back from north of Harrogate back to the Peak District. So it's it's a fairly sizable 2.5 days, really. After a long day of doing stuff today, it's going to feel doing 100K before bedtime will be fun.
You'll be a shadow of your former self, Bruce. You
that's
will.
It.
I promise
that's
you.
It.
You'll definitely be at Raceway after all that. That's for sure.
that's right. Well, but we've got to change you. You've got to change what you're after. And, you know, if we, like you're saying, we haven't got racing to do. So we want to focus on being able to do something.
Definitely. Neil, are you riding the weekend?
Yeah, I'll be doing something this weekend. It's strange, as I said right at the beginning, earlier on, it's strange being able to train according to what you know you ought to be able to do. So yeah, big ride at the weekend, able to do it. Not quite sure what yet. Hopefully we'll get some off-road. I had to take a couple of months off. I hurt my thumb. It was just really, I think I mentioned it in the last show, really annoying. You know, it was, you know, everything else is fine. But it just meant I couldn't grip the bars really well on the mountain bike. And so I had to take 2 months off. And then coming back was quite a shock, actually, coming back to a mountain bike when you've not... It's amazing. Well, maybe it won't surprise you just how rusty you can get in that amount of time.
I'm not looking forward to it. I haven't been on a mountain bike since I ripped my shoulder and got my nice arterial bleed in my arm, etc. So at the moment, my rotator cuff doesn't let me grip a mountain bike bar. I can do a road bar. So I've been doing like 2.5 hour cross rides, which I've got on Sunday, I think, and 2.5 hours on the road, which is Saturday. But mountain bike, no. Put your elbows out and try and do chicken wings. Mine is definitely flapping duck, being shot by shot on the fields, going around in circles, that's for sure, because it doesn't work. So it's going to be really interesting. I might be picking your brains, Neil, for... how to come back after having so many months off the mountain bike. Rusty is not going to be the word. It'll be titanically bad.
I'm not, shall I say, I'm not ready yet to give you a definitive answer to that question. And at that, I think we ought to cross the finish line. it's been great to catch up with everyone. Thanks so much to Dave Haygarth for joining us on the show today. And you can find us on the internet. You can find me on Instagram at Crosscast Neil. Bruce, where can we find you?
You can find me at Bruce Dolphin CX on the social. And Matt, where can we find you?
Quite a lot on the internet at the moment, because you can catch up with me Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Downing Cycling YouTube channel, broadcasting the Donny Chain Gang live, which is as good a racing as we've getting so far. You can get me on Twitter and on Facebook at Matt Fixapain as well.
And don't forget to subscribe and to tick the box for alerts on the Facebook page for the Crosscast. And until next time, we'll see you on the other side of the tape. Bye.